All right, we're getting here with the Mishnah on the top of Chof Vav and Aleph. The Mishnah says, V'chulam. So Chulam, Rashi says, HaChacham, who was in the previous Mishnah, HaMevi Get, which is in the Mishnah before that, as well as HaMe'id B'Yishala HaSiyah. All these individuals were precluded from marrying the woman because it didn't look good. They were Nogea B'Davar, so we don't allow them to marry the woman. But Chulam, Sheyulahem Nashim, they had wives, meaning the Chacham, the Meviget, or the Me'id B'Isha, they had a wife, Umeitu. And after some time, the wife passes away, Mutarot Linasedahem. Then they are permitted to marry these women after that period of time. So this is interesting. The Rishonim have different approaches to why this works. Some discuss the fact that even though polygamy was allowed at that time, nevertheless, it wasn't so common. So if the individual already had a wife, the likelihood that he would have in mind to marry this woman is very low. And therefore, only when his wife passes away later that he takes this woman, it's disconnected from the information, the testimony, whatever happened. And that's why it's permitted. Rashi just says the wife was around. He doesn't explain to you the reason. So one possibility, again, is that polygamy was not so common, even though it was muteret. Another possibility is that pat bisalo. If a person has a wife, they're not thinking about another wife. If a person's single, then there's a higher likelihood that they're thinking about another woman. And the Muke Yosef, based on that, suggests that if the wife, for instance, was deathly ill, then we might suspect that he was involved because he's considering the effects after his wife has passed away. He doesn't have pat bisalo. Last possibility is about a person sinning. I mean that a person, we said before, enu chotev lo lo, a person doesn't sin when there's no benefit to himself. That's number one. Number two is a person will not sin to take the risk that maybe in the future this might be a possibility. Because over here, he's married at the time, and therefore when he frees this woman, there's no guarantee that this woman's going to be around in the future. She might marry someone else. She might go off and be somewhere else. There's no guarantee that sinning now to benefit yourself and the possibility that the wife might pass away in the future, that would be worthwhile. So the three general approaches as to why when the person's married at the time, we're not chushesh that they have their eyes on this woman. V'chulan, shinis'u la'cherim. These women, if they married someone else in the interim, v'nitgarshu, and then they divorced that third party, oshnit almenu, or they were widowed, mutarot linasedahem, then they can marry them. Meaning because a third party intervened and married this woman, the chashash falls away because it's clear that there was no direct connection between this individual, his actions, and the marriage later on because there was an interim marriage. And again, we don't suspect them of doing this for the other party, for that interim marriage. V'chulan mutarot livnehen o le'acheihem. And again, all of them are mutarot to marry the brother or the son of the individual, either it was maybe the get, the chacham who is not matir, or the me'id v'isha. All of these individuals, they may be precluded from marrying this woman, but their brothers and their children are mutarim to marry this woman. So now, the Gemara says, Meitawin, Nitgarshu, Lo. So only if his wife dies, mean that he is widowed, do we say that then, when he marries her afterwards, there's no chashad, because at the time of the event, he was married. But Nitgarshu, if he divorces his wife afterwards, then no. Then it becomes a little more suspicious, because why is he divorcing his wife? Because he knows that this woman is available now. So Amar Le Rav Hillel the Rav Ashi Vatanya, we have a bright that says the opposite. Afilu nitgarshu, that even if they got divorced, then it's fine for them to get married. I mean, as long as he was married at the time of the event, that's fine. It says lokasho, ha davai ktata, ha dlo havai ktata. So the Rishonim read this in different ways. This is a case where there was a quarrel between them. And this is a case where there was no altercation between them. So Rashi reads it, that ha davai ktata means that they were having an altercation at the time of the case. When the case was going on, the husband was already quarreling with his wife. So from that, what do you see? You see they got divorced, not because of the case, but because there was something else going on beforehand. It was independent of this matter. They were already having trouble, and that's why they got divorced. That's the way Rashi learns it. Obviously, you could see others learning just the opposite, which is the fact that he was quarreling at the time of the case made him more apt to do something to free this woman, because then he knew if he got divorced, he'd have this woman waiting in the wings. So therefore, he knew he was going to get divorced because the quarrel or the difficulty was already there. And therefore, the Rishonim learned just the opposite, which is that Kitata is a sign of him wanting to now free this woman, versus Rashi was saying that Kitata means that people are not going to be choshev that it's about this case because they knew that there was something going on between him and his wife prior to this. They're already in therapy, and since the therapy didn't work out, they got divorced afterwards. It has nothing to do with the case over here. And the other case is where there was no quarrel. So then, in Rashi's case, the fact that there's no quarrel makes it awfully suspicious that he just all of a sudden divorced his wife right after this case happened. I mean, why is he divorcing his wife? There's no evidence of there being any problem in the marriage, and all of a sudden he divorces his wife. That's suspicious, and it must be that he was trying to get married to this other woman, and then people will suspect the whole incident. Again, for the other Rishonim, means at the time of the case, there was no altercation, and therefore, there was no reason for us to believe at the time of the case, he had ulterior motives. Later on, when he gets divorced, that's detached, it's separate from the case, and there's no reason to believe that he's doing it to marry this woman, or he did something wrong in the beginning. So depending, you can learn either way, whether the ktata is to his benefit, meaning that in that case we will allow him to marry, or the other way around, that the ktata is to his detriment because then he had his eyes on this woman already. Both incidents are a case where there was no altercation between them. Lokasha, hadar gilhu, hadar gilahi. Depends who started the problem. Who provoked the divorce over here? If he's the one who provoked the divorce, then we suspect that the reason he provoked the divorce was he had his eyes on this woman. He knew that he had just freed her up, so he instigates the divorce process in order to get this woman. On the other hand, if she is the instigator here, then how would he have known that his wife was going to start a divorce proceeding after that he had freed up this woman? So therefore, we wouldn't suspect that it was him that was doing it intentionally in order to free this woman up.
We're talking about all the time.
Right, so the Mishnayot speak about more than one wife, but historically it was not very common. We know that, especially by the time of the Amoraim, it's not common. Maybe in the time of Tanaim was, but even in the time of Tanaim, it doesn't seem to me that it was so common. The Mishnayot talk about possibilities. So I say this, the Gemara is not about always about the reality. It's about understanding the limits and understanding what are the situations. Again, historically, I'm not sure when that transition happens where polygamy becomes much less common. The reasons for polygamy becoming less common, I mean, according, by the time of the Gezerot of Rav Meir Gershom, Mor HaGola, there already it's because he says we don't want to be a laughing stock of the nations, where in all the Ashkenazi nations, polygamy was unacceptable. And how could it be? We were like these cavemen who still have polygamy. So by then, that's the reason that's given. In the Sephardi communities, it was still acceptable, and it still happened. And again, in their countries that they were living, like today, it was well accepted within the Arab community, and therefore they didn't look so different. That's one. The second reason is that it's expensive. In terms of having more than one wife, first of all, it means you have to support that wife and the children that are born of that wife. So many times you see the king. The king has multiple wives because the king has the means by which to support multiple wives and multiple children. We see that by David HaMelech. When David HaMelech is king in Hebron, he has a couple of wives. When he moves up to be the king of Yerushalayim, he's Musif, he takes other women, other wives. Because as he grows to be more powerful and the king, he becomes, in a sense, wealthier, he's able to support a larger number of wives. So there are two things involved here, which is, one is whether it was acceptable socially, but in that time earlier on, it was more acceptable, at least in many places, but the more important thing was, the cost. If you're wealthy, that's one thing. If you don't have the means by which to support, you're not just going to have multiple wives just to have multiple wives. It's an undertaking. And therefore, it may not have been that everybody had multiple wives. Just that's a sidebar. But historically, it seems to be that by the time of the Amoraim, for sure, I don't know which period of the Tanaim do we have it that already they didn't have multiple wives. See that by Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva is married at least two, maybe three times, according to the Gemara. And he does it in succession, not necessarily at the same time. So already, this is in the time of the Tanaim already, where we're not seeing multiple wives. Mishnayot, the Gemara, discussing cases in order to plumb the depths of understanding the halacha and understanding the ramifications of the halacha, doesn't necessarily mean that that was the practice at the time. Again, it could have been, but I don't know when that transition happens where polygamy becomes much less common. V'kulan shenis'u, and if they got married in the interim. Kasal kadatcha, mita amita, gerushin agerushin. We assume here that this Mishnah is parallel to the previous Mishnayot. So for instance, in the previous Mishnah, where we had hamevi get, maybe dinatayam, the individual brings a get to tell this woman that she is divorced. She remarries, and then divorces again. Or, in the case where you have an aide that comes and say her husband passed away, or was killed, and then we have this Mishnah where she got married again, and the husband dies again. So the assumption being that her first husband died, and then her second husband died. Her first husband divorced her, then her second husband divorced her. Neima matnita deloka rabbi. Let us assume that this Mishnah is not like Rabbi. Dika Rabbi, Rabbi has a belief, the Amar betrays Zimne Aviyah Chazoka. Rabbi believes that it's two is enough to make a chazaka, as opposed to the Chachamim who think three is a chazaka. Over here, two is a chazaka. So, if that's the case, if she married a man and he was killed or died, and then she married a second man and he was killed or died, according to Rabbi, that's a chazaka already. She's what's called chazakat katlanit. She's a killer wife, a black widow, and therefore we wouldn't allow her to marry the third individual, or the third individual shouldn't have married her. The fact that our Mishnah allows the Chacham, the Mevi Get, or the Me'id to marry her and have a third marriage implies that we don't have a Chazaka already. So that's like the Shita of the Chachamim, not like the Shita of Rabbi. So that's the Gemara's assumption here. But obviously built into the assumption is that was Mita al Mita and Gerushin al Gerushin. Obviously Rabbi's answer is going to be no, that they don't have to be that way. It says, lo, Mita Gerushin, Gerushin al Mita. You can swap them around and say that the first case is a case where the aide came and said that her husband had died or was killed, and then she got married to a third party and divorced him, and therefore she's now available. There's no chazaka here because there was no duplicate of an event with regards to a husband. The same is true the other way around. If he maybe get medina tayam, the second husband that she married dies, and then this individual is marrying her. There's no consistent pattern here that we're going to say, even according to Rabbi, that there is a chazaka. All right, next case. V'kulan mutarot ibnehem ul'acheihem. Ma'ishnam adetanyo. How is this different than what we have in the Tosefta? The Tosefta, which is expanding, qualifying our Mishnah that we saw before, which is, hanitan min aisha, someone who there are rumors circulating about him having an extramarital affair with this woman, I mean, the woman's having the extramarital affair, asur bi'ima u'bibita u'ba'achota. He may not marry not only her, but he may not marry her mother, her daughter, or her sister. So nishay, legabe nishay, shechichan da'azlan. Women visit women. Women work in groups. They are more likely to have the company of the other. And therefore, if he's really carrying on an affair with this woman, then this woman, after she is either divorced from her husband, or even if she stays married, if he goes ahead and marries her mother, her daughter, or her sister, that's going to bring him into proximity with this woman. It's facilitating his ability to continue on the affair because he's marrying women who will bring this woman into his house. Gavre the gabi gavre l'shchichan. But by men, it's not common that they are together, and therefore, if the son or the brother marries this woman, it's not going to make it that she's more available for znut. Inami, nishay delo asran shchivatan ahadodi lo kapte ahadodi. Women who know that when their husband has an extramarital affair, it's not going to make him asur to her. So in this case, if he marries her sister, her daughter, or her mother, and then he carries on an affair with the original woman, the wife now, who is either her mother, daughter, or sister, will not lose out on her marriage. Because the fact that polygamy is allowed means that if the husband is carrying on this affair with the woman, that doesn't make him asur to his proper wife. But gavre, the Asra and Shechivatana Hadodi, Kapte Adodi. On the other hand, men who will Oser on the other, if, again, here by the son or the brother marries this woman, and then he says, okay, well, that gives me accessibility to the woman because married to the brother, the father. Well, that's not the case because the brother, the father are going to be protective of their wife because if they continue to carry on an affair or they have an affair with this individual, then their wife's going to be a sword to them because she's carrying on a consensual extramarital affair and that consensual extramarital affair is going to make her a sura. So that's why over here we make a difference between the men and the women. But the case of the women will allow the husband to carry on this extramarital affair because that doesn't change his status vis-a-vis her. On the other hand, the husbands are not going to allow this to happen because vis-a-vis them, it's going to make his wife a surah, and therefore he won't protect against that happening. So that's the difference in the Mishnayot. In our Mishnah, it says, B'nehem and Achayhem can marry because we have no suspicions that that marriage is going to lead to the continuation of the Znut or the possibility that he's just setting it up so she can be accessible to him because the brothers or the sons are not going to allow it to go on, because otherwise if that happens, they're going to lose their wife. On the other hand, by the Nitan, by the case of the rumor, then if he marries her mother, her daughter, or sister, and then he carries on the affair with the woman, that's not going to change his status vis-a-vis his marriage to her sister, mother, or daughter. Yeah, I mean, the status does change, because as Rashi says, with regards to Asur B'Imah B'Tava Chuta, as long as he's just carrying on an affair where she's an Ahusa or a Mufuta, then the Krovot of the Isha are not Asur to him. Inlan Kain Kichada Rishona, unless he has Kiddushin with her. It's only Ishut that drives Isur. So he is allowed to marry her mother, her daughter or sister, because the original affair that was carried on was not a marriage. So that's why he's allowed to marry them. But once he does marry them, then et ima vet pita omeret anit enet arishona lav bikaret. Then it becomes an isur karet. And so therefore we don't want him marrying these women because if we allow him to marry the women, he's going to continue on the affair and the affair is going to lead to a chiyuv karet. Not only is there a problem, meaning that she's going to be accessible and maybe the accessories over here are going to allow it to take place, but there's also a more serious problem, which is there is a chiyuv karet. So Rashi is expressing what you're saying, but that's part of the chashash here. Why we don't want this to go on is because the people are going to facilitate it or allow it to be facilitated. And when they allow it to be facilitated, we're going to end up bump up into a chiyuv karet now instead of what before was just maybe an isur lav. And that's why we don't want this whole scenario taking place. Because we're saying that the women might make it accessible to him, either because women are by each other, or a woman will look the other way and allow this to go on. Meantime, now you have a chiyuv karet. And so we don't want that to continue. On the other hand, with the men will stop it because the men aren't going to allow this to take place because it's going to ruin his marriage to this woman. Now, Gemara says, Ihachi aviv nami. Why does the Mishnah only mention children and brothers? In the Tosefta that mentioned before, the Hanita'an is about sister, mother, daughter. Our Mishnah only has about brother and son, does not mention father. So, lo mi bayi kamar. Lo mi bayi aviv dibaziz banei minei. You don't even have to mention the father. Because with regards to the father, the child has, this is in the olden days, Rashi says, boshu mi aviv emoto alaf. He is embarrassed. He is afraid of his father. He has a certain amount of respect, fear, but that wouldn't allow him to cross the lines. So certainly if this woman marries his father, she's out of bounds. And there's no question that the affair, or if there is a possibility of affair, would not continue in that scenario. Aval b'no, d'lo bazis aviv minei, but maybe by the child, we would have thought that's not the case. It's the reverse relationship. Where the son marries it, maybe the father would take advantage of that situation. So emalo, maybe we'd say he can't marry. Kamash malon, that we don't worry about that. By the marriage to a brother, son, or father, all of those are permitted because we don't suspect that the relationship will continue, either because the men aren't by each other, so it doesn't make her accessible, or because, again, the men will not facilitate this happening because they're going to lose their wife, if that is the case. Okay, with that, we complete the second parak. Adron alach, ketzad eshet achiv. Now we bring up the Mishnah, a Mishnah that should be very familiar to us because we've quoted it numerous times already. We've seen it 3 or 4 times and mentioned in other contexts, a scenario that we painted over and over again. So the Mishnah itself will be familiar to us, then we're going to get involved in the issues of Zika, and here we'll get a little more deeper into things that the Gemara already assumed that we knew or we understood. It all comes out of this Mishnah, which is Arba'a Achin. You have four brothers, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda. Shnei mehem nisuin shtei achayot. Reuven and Shimon are married to Rachel and Leah. Umeitu hanisuim et achayot. And the two brothers that are married to the sisters pass away without children. That's Reuven and Shimon pass away, leaving Rachel and Leah to Levi and Yehuda. Harielu chotzot velo mityabmot. Levi and Yehuda have to perform chalitza with these women. They cannot take them as yivamim. The reason being that it's achot zkugato. Again, this is a problem dirabanan, which is that for each Levi and Yehuda, when looking at these two women, looking at Rachel, she has a zikat to Levi, she also has a zikat to Yehuda. And the other sister, Leah, has a zikat to Levi, and she has a zikat to Yehuda. So if Levi goes ahead and tries to perform Yibum with Rachel, he's pogeya b'achot zkukato, because he's also partially married to Leah. So by taking Rachel, it's problem of achot zkukato. Again, it's a problem d'rabbanon, but because of that, we're going to say chotzot, velo mityabmot. You have to do chalitza, you can't do yibum. We saw earlier already that may not only relate to Zika, it also might relate to, even according to those that hold there's no Zika, there may be a problem, which is mevato mitzvat yibamim. The problem that you might eliminate the mitzvah of yibum, because if the first brother goes ahead and performs yibum, and then the second brother passes away, then the other woman is going to go free without doing anything. So for instance here, if Levi takes Rachel as a Yivama, and then Yehuda passes away, Leah is going to go free without anything because the only option left is for her to marry Levi, but Levi's already married to her sister. So you'll perform nothing. Leah will go out without any Chalitza or Yibum. Whereas if we force them to do Chalitza, then even if Yehuda passes away, Levi will do Chalitza with Rachel, and then he'll do Chalitza with Leah. Because even though she is a Chot Chalutzato, that's only a Dinder Abon, and it will still require a Chalitza. And therefore, you mekayim the mitzvah of Yibum with both of them. Yibum mean Yibum or Chalitza, but that's how we protect it. Right? That's the conclusion from that, is that we'd rather have two Chalitzot than one Yibum. So either it's because you believe there's a Zika, or you believe because there's no Zika, but it could possibly be Mevatel Mitzvah Yibamim. Again, we already saw this earlier. The Gemara here is going to say this explicitly and spell it out. Vim kadmo vikansu. If the two brothers, Levi and Yehuda, went ahead and married these women, yotziu, they have to divorce them. Rabbi Eliezer omer beit shemai omrim yikayimu, you're allowed to keep them. Obviously, the reason that you would be allowed to keep them is because the isser was an isser dirabanan of achot zekukato. But once they're married, they've basically eliminated the problem retroactively. Because when Levi marries Rachel and Yehuda marries Leah, then once they've married them, they eliminated the brother's zikah to them. And then retroactively, he didn't marry his achot zekukato. Two brothers married to two sisters, and the zikah drops away. Beit Hillel omrim yotziu. On the other hand, Beit Hillel believes that they must divorce them, and the Gemara will discuss why that is, that they won't know how to keep them. Obviously, because they violated the restriction against marry them, the restriction to Rabbanan, but we'll discuss this in more detail in the Gemara. Hayta achat mehem asura aleichad. If for whatever reason Levi was restricted to Rachel or Leah, same scenario. Yeah, exactly same scenario, except here, Levi is related to one of them. Say, for instance, Rachel is his daughter. Levi's daughter is Rachel, and therefore Levi cannot perform Yibum with Rachel. In that instance, the only one available to him is Leah. So therefore, if Asura alachad isur erva, Asurba, umutar bachota, he cannot marry Rachel, but he can perform Yibum with Leah. Vashini asur b'shtehem. But for Yehuda, they remain both as achot zekukato, and therefore Levi is going to have to act first. Now once Levi is acted, it might actually change the scenario for Yehuda. That will depend on how you view this, because achot zekukato was there at the time of the death. Therefore, she was asura.
That's when you hear the death. Maybe both of them died the same second.
Okay, the Gemara will get into that. Very good question. Excellent question. Yeah, the Gemara is going to deal with that. But assuming that Yehuda was faced with the possibility of marrying Rachel and Leah at one point, They were achot zkukato, they became a surah to him. If you believe that once they are asurim, they become like an eshet ach, then even after Levi performs yibum with Leah, that's not going to free up Rachel to Yehuda because she was once a surah to him and she remains a surah. If you believe if there's a surah can then turn back to being heter, then Yehuda could marry her. But the Mishnah here assumes no, but sheni asur b'shtehem, that he is asur with both of them, and it seems to be even if Levi performs yibum with one of them. Isur mitzvah v'isur kedusha. On the other hand, if Rachel is only asur to Levi, not isur erva, but only isur either shniot midrabanan or isur lav. In that case, chotzot v'lo mitya bemet, because there midoraita she is reuya to him. It's only because of gzera derabanan that we don't allow him to form yibum with either shniot arayot because it's an isur derabanan or with an isur lav because there goes there bi arishona ata bi shnia. So technically, midoraita, you are chayav in yibum, and therefore they are both achod zekukato still, even though there's an iser on one of them, and because of that, he has to be choletzit. Now here, this is should be familiar to us, because this is back earlier in the Masechta and Daf Tet, where we had the very difficult Rashi on Daf Tet, trying to explain all the scenarios in Tani de Rabbi Chia, where Rabbi Chia says, I can apply this statement of our Mishnah to the first Mishnah. All 15 of the arayot in the first Mishnah can be governed by this statement. This statement is, Haita achat mehem asura ze, isur erva. So, for Levi, Rachel was asur to him because she was his daughter. Veshniya asura ze, and Yehuda has a restriction with gabe le'a, isur erva, whatever that isur is of erva. Asura laze, muteret laze. Asura laze, muteret laze. By eliminating one of the two possibilities, then the remaining woman he can perform yibum with, because there's no achot zekukato over here. Again, that was what Rabbi Chia said, that we can come up with cases for all the 15 arayot in our first Mishnah, where you have two sisters, and asura laze, muteret laze, and they can be miyabeim, the achayot. Vezuhi shamru, and that's the statement that was made, that we brought back there, which is achuta, kishiyivimta. Her sister, when she is your mama, o choletzet o mityabemet. He has a choice to do what he pleases because he's asur to one of them, and therefore the other one is muteret. The other one muteret, he can treat her like any other yevama. Perform yibum or perform chalitza, his choice of what he wants to do. Right? Shema mina. The Gemara concludes from here. Yesh zika. There is zika. Why? Dine zika. If there's no zika over here, michtei. Hani mitrei bati ka'atyun. These two sisters came from two different husbands. If there is no zika here, Reuben and Shimon pass away, the two sisters now are available to Levi and Yehuda, let Levi marry one of them, and Yehuda marry the other of them, why would you have any issue at all? The only issue is, achot zekukato. But there is no zika. If you don't believe there's zika, then achot zekukato is not relevant. They should be able to marry. Levi marry Rachel, and Yehuda marry Leah. Olam emlecha ein zika. And nevertheless, mishum tekazavar. So again, we saw this back on Yudchet, Yudet, that Asur Levatel Mitzvat Yivamin. That there's a separate issue, which I described in the Mishnah, which is that the possibility, even when there's no Zikah, we wouldn't want you to perform Yibam here, because that we've been Mevatel, the possibility of Yibam by the second woman. Because Dilma, Admiyabim Chad, Levi goes ahead and forms Yibam with Rachel, and then Mayit Idach, Yehuda passes away. And then Leah goes free without anything. No chalitza, no yibum. So that was what we discussed over there, that this approach seems to indicate that, first of all, chalitza and yibum are equal options, and I would give precedence to performing two chalitzot over performing one yibum. I'd rather that you perform chalitza with both women and not be mevatel the mitzvah of yibum, than to have the first brother perform yibum and risk that the second one won't have anything at all. So that's, again, that's strong evidence to a position that believes that Yibam and Chalitza are equal options, and it's not just that Yibam is the option and then Chalitza is just the way to unwind it, but they're actually equal, and again, I'll give precedence to two Chalitzot over one Yibam. Gemara says, Ihachi, Tlata Nami. So why don't you say the same thing by three brothers? When I have a scenario where there are three brothers, why don't I say the same thing? So in a case where it's just Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, so Reuven and Shimon pass away. They were married to two sisters. And then Levi's available here. So the Gemara says, if there is no problem of Zika, or in that scenario, why doesn't Levi go ahead and perform Yibum with one of these women? There's no possibility that he can deal with both women. Because if he's Miyabim one woman, then the other one goes free. If he's Choletz to one of the women, then it's Achot Chalutzato. Wait a minute, well, Achot Chalutzato is only a Din Derabonon. So in that scenario, we would say to Levi, don't perform Yibum with one of them, and the other one goes free without anything. Form Chalitza with both women. And so if that's the scenario, the case of three brothers gives you the same information as if you had done it with four brothers. By Zika, that's not the case. Again, by the case of Levi, Chotz Kukato prevents him from marrying the woman. No Chiddush over there. The Chiddush here in the Mishnah is if you have four brothers, and each brother could independently marry one of these two women, that's a big Chiddush that even though they could each marry one woman, the Zika still prevents them from doing that. In the case of Levi, that the Zika prevents him is because he's one guy, and he has both women there. That's why it prevents him. That makes sense that the Zika prevents him. The greater Chiddush is to put four brothers than three brothers for Zika. On the other hand, for the Vatel Mitzvah Yivamim, you can get the same information from one extra brother than from two extra brothers. Which is, we want you to perform two Chalitzot, and not one Yibum. Doesn't matter if it's just Levi, or if it's Levi and Yehuda. The Gemara says, Lo Mibayi Kamrinan. No, it's a lo mibayi. Lo mibayi tlata devadai b'teila mitzvat yivamim. Not only in the case where it's three brothers, where for sure he would be mevatel the mitzvah yivamim. If he performed yibum with one of them, then by definition the other one goes free, and there is no mitzvah yivamim. So you're automatically mevatel the mitzvah yivamim with the case of three. About Dalid, when you have four brothers, it's not automatic. It's only a safek. If the first brother performs yibum, then the only way it's mevatel mitzvah yivamim is if the second brother passes away. Well, that's a safek. So maybe in that case, I would say, go ahead, because we're not choshesh the mita. Well, dalu the mita lo chashinan. By mita, I would not be choshesh. Kamash manda, we are choshesh the mita. And it's still considered to be mevatel mitzvah yivamim. So in the case of three, there, where Levi performs yibum with Rachel, Leah goes free for sure. And he is definitely mevatel the mitzvah of yibum with Leah, because he does nothing with Leah. So there, for sure, I would tell him, do chalitza with Rachel and do chalitza with Leah. That way you're mekayim the mitzvah of Yibum with both of them. In the case of four brothers, where Levi and Yehuda are now available to perform Yibum with Rachel and Leah, over there, if Levi goes ahead and performs Yibum with Rachel, then there's a good possibility that Leah will be taken care of, because Yehuda's there, and he'll either perform Yibum or chalitza with Leah. What are we worried about? That Yehuda passes away. Are we really choshesh from mita? It's only a safek that you'll be mevatel the mitzvah of Yibum. It's only if Yehuda passes away. So that's not definite that you're going to be mevatel the mitzvah of Yibum. What's the answer? Yes, kamash lan, we are choshesh lamita. We do worry about the fact that Yehuda might pass away, and therefore we do not allow Levi to marry Rachel or to perform Yibum with Rachel because of that possibility that Yehuda might pass away. Where it says, hi-hachi, if that's the case, chamisha nami. In the case of five brothers, also in that scenario, where you have Reuven, Shimon married to Rachel and Leah, two sisters, and then you have their additional brothers of Levi, Shimon, and Issachar. So in that case, why don't we worry about it as well? So now you have three brothers available after the death of Reuven and Shimon, and two women. So let Levi goes ahead and performs Yibum with Rachel, and now we say, okay, now Leah is available. You have Yehuda, and you have Issachar who can perform Yibum or Chalitza with her. Why don't we say we're Choshesh that they're going to pass away? And then Leah's going to go free without anything because Levi's already married to her sister. If you're choshesh the mita, why aren't you choshesh for multiple mitot? So the answer is, so the mita de trei lo chashinan. We don't worry about two deaths. Meaning that the probability of one death that we're willing to suspect or worry about or deal with. The probability of two deaths, that we will not worry about because that's much more of an uncommon occurrence. As much as mita is an uncommon occurrence, two mito is just multiplied the probability of one mita by itself. You multiply that number by itself, so it's a significantly smaller possibility. In that case, you're not choshesh the trei mitot. And again, this relates back to the Gemara in Yoma, where we discuss about the Kohen Gadol taking an extra wife for Yoma Kippurim, and the machloket there between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda about taking the extra wife. The Chachamim say he should take one wife. The Yehuda says, well, if he's going to take one wife, doesn't he get a backup to the backup? Right? Because if you're choshesh the mita, you should be choshesh the mita for everyone. So there, the Gemara says, so the one mita, we are choshesh, the trei, lo shkiach. With two mitot, it's not shkiach. So So here Tosafot discusses whether these cases are parallel. In the end, he says they're not necessarily parallel because the difference between Choshesh Lemita, which is an immediate Mita, versus Mita over a span of time. In the case of Yoma, you have to worry about the fact that there's going to be a death within a very short period of time together. It's on Yom Kippur. You're going to be Choshesh that two women will die on Yom Kippur itself. So that's very unlikely. Whereas over here, they don't have to die that day. I mean, this could take place over a period of months because it could take time before the Yibum, the Chalitza. They have to wait anyway 3 months after the death of the first husband to make sure that she's not pregnant. There is a time span over here, and maybe over here, you would say that Trey is possibility because you have a much wider span of time. So Tosafot tries to differentiate and say these two cases or two statements might be independent of each other. You could believe one in one case and the other in the other case because they're not necessarily parallel, because it's a question of the period of time in which you're choshesh for multiple mitot. Over there, it's like an immediate period of time. Over here, it's over a span of time. So even the chachamim over there would say we're not choshesh. Maybe over here would say we are choshesh, and vice versa. You could argue that there's a difference. Amar Rava bar Rav Huna, Amar Rav. Right, this is going to launch us into a gemara here that's going to take us through tomorrow's daf. But here, the first statement is, in the name of Rav, which is Shlosh Achayot Yivamot, Shnaflu Lifnei Shnei Achim Yivamim. So you have three sisters that fall to two brothers for Yibum. Zecholetz Lachat, Vezecholetz Lachat. So again, in the case here where you have Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, Reuven, Shimon, and Levi are all married to sisters, Rachel, Leah, and Bilhah. Three sisters married to three brothers. Then the three brothers pass away without children, and these three achayot, these three sisters, fall to the remaining two brothers for Yibum. The remaining two brothers being Yehuda and Yisachar. So Yehuda and Yisachar now have three women who are all sisters that are before them for Yibum. So now, the instructions are, Zechol Eitzlachat, Vezeluch Eitzlachat. Yehuda performs Chalitza with Rachel. Then Yisachar performs Chalitza with Leah. Now what about Bilhah, the third sister? There, V'emtza'it. Emtza'it doesn't need the middle one, it means the latter one. As Tosafot points out, it's because both of them are going to act on her, so therefore she's called the Emtza'it, the middle one. V'tzricha Chalitza mishnehem. She requires Chalitza from both of them. Amar le Rabbo, midekamart Emtza'it tzricha Chalitza mishnehem. Since you say this, last of the sisters requires Chalitza from both of them, Kasavart yesh zika. First of all, you definitely believe there is zika. V'havila chalitza psula. And since there is zika, this chalitza is a chalitza psula. V'chalitza psula tzrich lagzor al kol achim. And when you have a chalitza psula, then everybody's got to participate. So let's take this in stages. First of all, the Rav holds that there is a zika. That we already know from back earlier in the Gemara. Amar Rav Huna, Amar Rav, that Rav does not believe that there is zika. The Gemara will address that later on. But right now we're assuming that this statement in Rav says there is zika. And we're going to prove that from this statement. Rashi has the girsa that we find in our Gemara. Tosafot has a slightly different girsa about how we can prove that it is zika. The fact that we require the first two brothers to perform chalitza with the two women, that proves that it is zika. All right, and he explains why Rashi didn't learn that way and why he does learn that way, but just note that that's one possibility. But here we say that there must be zika. Why do we know there's zika? Because they have to both perform chalitza with the latter woman. That is because when he goes and performs chalitza with the first woman, then he has taken care of that chalitza. But then he has the woman who remains is now achot chalutzato. And the same is true of the other brother. When the other brother goes and performs chalitza with the other woman, but then once he's performed chalitza, that latter woman becomes achot chalutzato. So in the end, that third woman or that third sister is achot chalutzato both to Yehuda and to Yisachar because they both have already performed chalitza with their sisters. She's achot chalutzato to him. So now Rashi claims because of that, their chalitza now is downgraded. Why is their chalitza downgraded? Rashi says, Kasavart, alima mitzvah zika yivamim, the mirmei atarvayu. First of all, zika is strong enough to demand that they both have to deal with the situation. That's number one. Number two is, the chalitza is gru'a, she'im ratzali yabeim ene yachol, tachot chalutza tohi. He can't perform Yibum over here because she is Achot Chalutzato. Because in the first scenario, he has a strong enough bind to this woman that when he performs Chalitza with her, the Chalitza unlocks it and takes care of it. So when Yehuda performs Chalitza with Rachel, he unwound that Zika. Because the Zika is very strong, but so is the Chalitza very strong. So the Chalitza gets rid of the problem of the Zika. Same is true with regards to Yisachar. When Yisachar performs Chalitza with Leah, again, the Zika is very strong. He has no relationship to Leah. It's not Achot Chalutzato, because his brother performed the Chalitza with Rachel. So again, he performs Chalitza with Leah. That's a strong Zika, but he also has a strong Chalitza to unwind it. Now that both Yehuda and Yisachar performed Chalitza, the remaining woman, Bilha, is Achot Chalutzato for both of them. So according to Rashi, since they cannot perform Yibum with this woman, their Chalitza was degraded. The power of their Chalitza is degraded. And because the power of their Chalitza is degraded, the Zika that still exists, Bilha has a Zika to both of them, because Zika existed from the time that they died, then that strong Zika cannot be unwound by a Chalitza of one of them. It requires each one of them to disengage the Zika of this woman. Their Chalitza is not strong enough to eliminate the Zika entirely. It's only enough to eliminate the Zika vis-a-vis themselves, because they only have a weak Chalitza. So because of that, they both have to perform Chalitza with the third sister, in order to eliminate the Zika. They have a weak Chalitza. It only weakens the Zika. It doesn't eliminate the Zika. So each one of them will weaken the Zika until it disappears. That is the statement of Rav. And that is the conclusion the Gemara draws from the statement of Rav. Which is, if Rav requires the both brothers to perform Chalitza with the third woman, number one, it proves there is Zika. And that's why there's a problem here, because they're so strongly bound to that third woman, to the third sister. And number two is, it proves that the Chalitza that they're trying to perform is weakened Chalitza. So that's why they require both of them to form Chalitza in order to unwind that strong Zika that is with the last of the sisters. Right? That's the statement of Rav. So the Gemara says, Yochi, kamaita nami. Wait a minute. I glossed over this, but in the first place, each of the women that, say here, Yehuda performs Chalitza with Rachel, and Yisachar performs Chalitza with Leah, and we said they were perfectly good chalitzot. Why is that the case? In each of these scenarios, they're achot chalutzato, and they can't perform yibum. So if they can't perform yibum with them, then their chalitza is a weakened chalitza. They should require two chalitzot with each of these women. Why does Rav only require for the third woman, not for the first two women? Mar says, wait a minute. In nafol bavat achat hachanami. You're right. If all these three women were in front of them in one shot, then you're right. Then all the zikot would have existed. But lo, tzricha de nafal bazu achar zu. The case where they fell sequentially. Nafla chado, one of them passed away, meaning that Reuven passes away, and now his wife Rachel is presented to them. Chalatz la Reuven. So then Reuven came ahead. In our scenario, it's Yehuda that's doing it, but he performs chalitza with her. Nafla idach, then the next one passes away, and chalatz la Shimon. So again, in our case, it's Shimon who's dying, and Yisachar is performing the chalitza over here. But it all happened in a sequential nature where both sisters don't have zika on it. Then nafla idach. Then the third one, Bilha, now falls to the two brothers, Yehuda and Yisachar, in the Gemara sense, Reuven and Shimon. Chalatz la hai mafka zikato. When he performs chalitza, he only can get rid of his zika. Chalatz la hai mafka zikato. And then when the other brother performs the chalitza, he can only get rid of his zika. Because their chalitzot have been downgraded. Why are they downgraded? Because they already performed chalitza with her sister. She's now achot chalutzato. Achot chalutzato is a weakened form of chalitza. It can only deal with a portion of the zika, not the entirety of the zika. But ein hachanami, if she was achot zikukato originally, then we would also require chalitza from all the brothers. So for an instance where all three brothers passed away and the three sisters are sitting in front of them, in that scenario, according to what we're saying now, the two remaining brothers would have to form chalitza with all three of the women. Both of them. Because in order to eliminate the zika, they would need a strong enough chalitza. They don't have that. Because every one of these women is achot zikukato. So they have a weakened chalitza. Their weakened chalitza is not enough. Both brothers would have to form chalitza with each of the women. According to that, if they fell bevat achat. Okay, now that's Rashi's way of learning what the problem with the chalitza is. Rashi says it's only called a strong chalitza where you have an option for Yibum in the face of Chalitza. When it's Yibum and Chalitza, then the Chalitza is a strong Chalitza. If you only have the option for chalitza, it's no longer a strong chalitza, that's a chalitza grua, because the option of ibum is not available to you. That's Rashi's way of learning it. Whereas Tosfot sees the problem of chalitza psula as being somewhere where the zika is weakened. Once the zika is weakened, then so too is the chalitza weakened. Ela near the re, the loka shiva chalitza psula, ela, achot kukato, the mandamar zika. According to one who says there's zika, then achot kukato is a weakened form of zika, since he has a zika from both sisters, each one weakening the other's zika. Oh, achot chalutzato. Or because she is the sister of his chalutzato, ukuli, alma, according to everyone. Ubalat get, ubalat mamar. Or if he gave a get to a woman, or he did mamar. Bikulu kausha zika. In all these cases, you've weakened the zika. Da achot kukato, damya da achot ishto. Because achot kukato is similar to like the sister of his wife. Dein bazika. Achot chalutzato, the sister of chalutzato is kachot gerushato. Like the sister of his grusha. Ubalat get, damyo le chalutza. And balat get is like chalitza. Balmamar le knusa. That's like being kones. Dein bazika, where he wouldn't have any zika. V'chein sota de rabbanan le fiyar yushalmi. In all these cases, you have a weakened form of zika, because each of these are rabbinic in nature, but rabbinic in nature because they are similar to a case where no zika would exist. Since they're similar to cases where there no zika would exist, Rabbanan goes there in that case that the zika is a much weakened form of zika, or the connection is a much more weakened form of connection. And based on that, the chalitza is also a weakened form of chalitza. So Rashi thinks that the weakened chalitza comes from the lack of yibum, whereas Tosafot thinks that the weakened chalitza comes from a weakened zika. And that might relate to a machloket that we discussed earlier in the Masechta as to what is the driving force of yibum and chalitza. Is yibum and chalitza two sides of the same coin? They're equal options, and therefore yibum and chalitza, when yibum is present, chalitza is an equal option to yibum, and it's at the same strength. When there's a lack of yibum, then chalitza can't be that strong because yibum is just not present. Or do we say the fact that yibum and chalitza are present is just a sign that there is a zika? What generates the yibum and the chalitza is zika. A strong zika generates a strong yibum and a strong chalitza because they are derivatives of the zika. On the other hand, a weakened zika generates a weakened yibum, which won't exist here because it's not an option, or a weakened chalitza. And that weakened chalitza will not be enough to take care of the zika. Well, actually, turn out that Rashi, earlier in the Masechta, used the word zika in his Perush, making it sound like yibum and chalitza were the derivative of chalitza, and that the yibum and chalitza were just evidence of the zika. So if you have one, then automatically the other one is there because the zika is there. Whereas over here, it seemed to be the other way around. Over here, he seems to separate between the issues, because here he says the zika is super strong, even though there's no yibum over here. Be that as it may, once you've established that the chalitza is a weakened chalitza, then the question is, why do you need multiple chalitzel to get rid of the zika? For Rashi, it's obvious, because you have a weakened chalitza over here, but the zika remains at its strength, its same strength, and therefore each one of the brothers has to contribute his weakened chalitza to eliminate the entirety of the zika. According to Tosafot, who says that the zika is also weakened, why isn't the weakened chalitza able to overcome the weakened zika? And that might be because one who is choletz a chalitza psula, that looks like he didn't do chalitza. Meaning that it looks like he's only performed this half chalitza. So we're going to have to get all the brothers together to make it that they are performing a full-fledged chalitza, because otherwise it looks like she only got a partial release. Or you have to say that, again, the weakened chalitza is only sufficient to eliminate that yabam's connection to the zika, even in a weakened form of zika. It's not strong enough to eliminate his brother's connection to the zika, even this weakened form of zika, and therefore we're going to require all the brothers to perform chalitza over here. The Ramban explains this phenomenon by saying that when it comes to chalitza psula, we're no longer talking about the Torah's ideal of yibum and chalitza. When we're talking about the Torah's ideal of yibum and chalitza, then our optimal solution is that you perform yibum, And if you don't perform Yibum, you can perform Chalitza. But there, at least, you're addressing what the Torah is speaking about. In this case of the Chalitza Psula, where Yibum is not even an option anymore, in that instance, we're no longer working within the Torah's ideal of what a Yibum relationship should look like, but rather, the Chachamim are mitakein that this woman needs a release from these individuals that looks like Gerushin, that looks like a divorce. And in case of a divorce, every individual will have to divorce the woman in order to release themselves from the woman. Nobody can act on behalf of the others to perform a get. So just like by a get, each individual has to release the woman. So to over here, by Chalitza Psula, each one of the individuals will have to release the woman like Gerushin, since he's not acting within the construct of the optimal or ideal form of Yibum and Chalitza Min HaTorah. When you're acting within that construct, then the Torah wants one Yabam to perform Yibum with one Yivama. And that will take care of all the other Yivamim, and also all the other Yivamot and Sarot, because that's the Torah's request. And if that doesn't happen, the Chalitza, which is a strong Chalitza, will be sufficient to unwind that for every party that's involved. Because we're not talking about Gerushin, we're talking about Yibum. Although Rav Shimon Shkab says that this explanation of the Ramban cannot be used to explain that position of the Tosafot. But we have to say something along the lines of the fact that a weakened Zikah is evidenced by a weakened Chalitza. So you have a weak Zikah, you're going to have a weak Chalitza. Versus Rashi and other Rishonim, who see the lack of Yibum, saying that we've now left the world of Yibum and gone into a different world, which the Chachamim Ramban came like Gerushin, and that's why the Chalitza Psula is not sufficient. Okay, now the Gemara continues and says, V'hama Rav ein Zikah. Doesn't Rav say that there is no Zikah? So that was Amar Rav Huna Amar Rav, Shomeret Yabam Shemeta Mutar B'Imah. So that's the case where the Shomeret Yabam passes away that you're allowed to marry the Imah. The Gemara says, L'divrei Haomer Yesh Zikah Kamar. Rav is saying this according to the one who says there is a Zikah. So again, we have a definitive statement from Rav earlier on that ain't Zikah, based on Rav Huna. So the Gemara says, how could Rav here say Zikah? The Gemara says, he's not saying it in his own opinion, he's just saying, according to one who says Zikah, this would be the result of having a Zikah, you would have to do this. In this scenario, where you have three sisters falling to two brothers, the third sister who gets Chalitza would have to acquire a Chalitza from both of the brothers. The Gemara says, Shmuel Amar, Echad Choleitz Tukulan. Shmuel says, one of the brothers can perform Chalitza with each of the three sisters. So in our scenario there, one of the brothers could come along, do chalitza with Rachel, Leah, and Bilhah. No questions asked. One chalitza for each of them, plus only one brother can perform all the chalitzot. So Rav says, Mifteh Shmeinin Le'ed Shmuel Damar Chalitza Ma'al Yabina. First of all, we know from Shmuel that he requires a full-fledged chalitza. He agrees that if you have a weakened chalitza, it doesn't work. Damar Shmuel, because Shmuel says, Chalatz La'achayot Lo Nifteru Tzarot. So in a case where he performs chalitza with sisters, that does not free the tzarot, their co-wives. Their co-wives are not automatically released because of the chalitza that was performed with the achayot, with the sisters. So you have two achayot that fell to an individual, Levi, from two brothers. Reuven and Shimon passed away. Now Levi has these two sisters that he's facing. He can't marry both of them because they are sisters. So now he is faced with a achotz kukato problem, and now he performs chalitza with both of them. Shmuel says when he performs chalitza with the two sisters, the co-wives of those sisters are not automatically released from that chalitza. What do you see over there? You see that he believes that chalitza is weakened in that scenario, and it's weakened to the point where it can't free up the co-wives. Now the opposite will be true, we're not going to do that today, but if had they performed chalitza with the co-wives, then the arayot would have been released. Those are full-fledged chalitzot, because there's no problem of achotz kukato that's left. Even though the co-wives are derivatives of each other, nevertheless, Shmuel midrabanan sees that as being different. So Mar says, Heicha dekaima chalitza de Shimon, chalitza kshera, chalitza ruvein, chalitza psula. I don't understand. What are you suggesting in Shmuel's opinion? In Shmuel's opinion, where you have the three brothers that passed away with their three wives, and now they're available to the two brothers to perform chalitza, again, according to the Gemara, those that perform are Chalitza, Reuven, and Shimon. So now, Reuven perform Chalitza with one of the three sisters that's available. So now, what are you going to suggest? Reuven should go perform Chalitza with the next sister? It's a Chod Chalutza Tov. That's definitely a weakened form of Chalitza. Why wouldn't you have Shimon perform Chalitza with the second one, where he has a clean Chalitza? I don't understand how you could suggest, according to Shmuel, that one guy does chalitza with all of them. It makes no sense. If you have two brothers, the second brother should perform chalitza. He has a much stronger chalitza. And we see, according to Shmuel, that there is such a concept as a weakened chalitza. So Gemara says, "My echad cholitz lekulan nami de kamar." What is meant by echad cholitz lekulan? I am tzait. That means the last one. When it comes to the last one, then only one of them has to perform chalitza. Meaning that for the first two, we switch the brothers. So Reuven will perform chalitza with the first of the sisters. Shimon will perform chalitza with the second of the sisters. And then either one of them can perform chalitza with the last one, with the third sister. Va kulan kamar. Doesn't say kulan. Kaven deruba gabei karile kulan. Since the majority of the sisters are with them, they call it kulan. Because whoever performs chalitza with the third sister has two out of the three sisters on his slate. Vi baitema ki kamar Shmuel chalitza ma'al yabinon. When Shmuel says you need a real strong chalitza, hani mile lemiftar tsarata. That's only when you want to release the co-wife. Aval miftar anafsha patro. But to release yourself, you don't need a full-fledged chalitza. Because in the case of the achayot before, even though it was achot kukato, he can perform chalitza with the two sisters, and they're both released, according to Shmuel. The only ones that weren't released were their co-wives. But they themselves were released. So even though he performed chalitza when it was achot kukato, and it was a weakened form of chalitza, we say that the woman who he performs the chalitza with is released. So in that case, you could say that one of them performs chalitza with all three sisters here. Performs chalitza with the first sister, that's a full-fledged chalitza. Next one he performs the chalitza with, that's a chot chalutzato, it's a weakened form of chalitza. No problem, because he's trying to just release her. That chalitza, weakened chalitza works to release her, it doesn't work to release the co-wives, but her herself it will release. And therefore, he can perform chalitza with the other two sisters. There's one brother can perform chalitza with all of them, and it will release all of the sisters, as opposed to what Rav said before. So here you have both Shmuel and Rav making statements about Zika. Even though Rav doesn't hold of Zika, he's saying within the context of Zika. Rav says, if you hold of Zika, then because of that problem of achotz chalutzato and achotz kukato, you're going to end up in a scenario where the third sister is going to require chalitza from both brothers. Along comes Shmuel and says, it's just not true. That's not the case. You can have one of the brothers perform chalitza with all three sisters. Yes, I agree there's Zika. Yes, I agree there's a weakened chalitza. But weakened chalitza is enough to get rid of the Zika directly to the woman. It may not be enough to get rid of her co-wives, but it's enough to get rid of her herself. Whereas Rav says, that's not the case. If you have a weakened chalitza, it's not enough to eliminate the Zika. And therefore, you have to have both of them perform chalitza with this woman. Now, you can see it in one of two ways. Either Shmuel believes the chalitza is stronger than what Rav believes, and therefore can still overcome the Zika, or Rav thinks that the Zika is stronger than what Shmuel thinks. Shmuel thinks the Zika isn't as strong, and therefore the weakened chalitza can eliminate it, whereas Rav thinks the Zika is way too strong. So the machlokes can go either way, meaning that either Rav thinks Zika is much stronger, or Shmuel thinks that his chalitza is stronger than what Rav thinks. And either way, then you would get that difference of opinion, and tomorrow we'll discuss the position. Tomorrow we'll discuss in more detail this position of Shmuel. So we'll stop here, 7 lines down, of Chav Zayin, Amud Aleph.